subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, and we're here today to finish up the State Marine Board budget, and we will go into a work session and hear.
We don't have a quorum.
We will not go into a work session.
You can do a public hearing to get the information.
We will be in public hearing as we take the testimony that answers the questions that were raised yesterday. And what I'll do now is turn it over to Susie Jordan to kind of give us some pieces of information that we requested yesterday.
Let's start out with the revised spreadsheet on the Marine Board budget history. What I did was add a line under the breakdown of the law enforcement program. Actually, I added two lines. One is I separated the equipment costs out from the administration so you can see how much of that the balance is for equipment purchases and then the rest for staffing and associated supplies and services, and then added the percentages on the bottom table. So this is an updated version and accurate.
Hmm. Anyone have any questions on this revised spreadsheet?
Well,
Representative Hayden.
What is the, is there a normal administrative fee for an agency, and if so, what do they tend to run, or would each one be just wildly different?
Madam Chair,
a percentage.
Representative Hayden, there is no common percentage from agency to agency. It all depends on what you include in as an administrative cost or how you define administrative costs, and each agency has a slightly different program or need, and so you would need to evaluate each program and how it's being provided to the public and what benefit they're getting as a result of the administration as they define it.
Thank you.
Now, the next item.
The next item is in response to Representative Kropp's question about a comparison on the fiscal impact for House Bill 2977 and the Marine Board implementation costs. The bill was introduced in last session and passed during the session. There was no provision made in their budget for any implementation of the bill because it did not coincide with the budget bill passing out of Ways and Means and this bill going through, and so we left that open. But the Marine Board did estimate that initial administrative rule making would cost them about $51,000 in 9901. After the bill passed, the reality was that voters were more interested and anxious to get that program up and running, and so they moved up their implementation date by about 6 months and added staff ahead of schedule, and that incurred a higher cost for 9901. Because they had the higher than expected ending balance, they also had some revenues from their other funds to get the program going. So they went ahead and requested the staffing from the emergency board. And so those costs then are reflected in the on the Marine Board expenditure side under the 9901 costs. They do anticipate receiving about $125,000 out of the $10 permit fee, and which was implemented this January. So they're beginning to receive some of those revenues now, and then they expect to receive another $446,000 in the 0103 biennium for this program. The program is on a graduated schedule for implementation, so certain age groups have to have their permits by 2003, and another group has to have them by 2004 and on up. So there's about a 10-year implementation plan. I've also included on here what each of the positions that they hired are doing in the program. Their program rep one is responsible for developing and coordinating the entire program, providing course materials, making sure that partnerships are developed with volunteers and other people for providing the education course. They have a data entry operator to process the examinations and track the registrations or certification cards, and a public service rep who does the receives the correspondence, answers the phones and questions about the program, and that sort of thing. They'll also, with this budget, be hiring temporary personnel to assist them in their peak seasons when they expect to have more than or higher than normal requests for certification. So that's sort of where they are currently.
Representative Cook.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Susie, to help me understand, in looking at the comparison figures here, in your opening paragraph, you say no provision was made in the agency's budget for implementation of the measure in 9901. Then why did we pass the bill out with a fiscal on it if there was no provision in their budget for it? Don't the two sort of go hand in hand here?
Madam Chair, Representative Kropp, sometimes we allow legislation to go forward and advise the agency to come back to the emergency board for expenditure limitation. When it's an other-funded agency, that can be a way to expedite legislation.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I may.
Follow up.
In looking at the analysis of what was predicted to be for services and supplies outlays and capital outlays, there's a considerable divergence there in every category in 9901 in actual expenditures compared to what they were intending to spend. Okay. I believe I heard part of it in your explanation just a few moments ago, was they decided to move up the timetable on this thing, and they had some ending balance funding they could use for that purpose, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. It also then, and am I assuming that additional expense that they had not anticipated, which is listed under the actual expenses of $136,000, is being offset by revenue of reasonably offset at $125,000, and they had not, that was not part of the fiscal analysis either?
Madam Chair, Representative Kropp, that's correct.
And so, Madam Chair, if I may, so what we have here is a good look at what LFO thought would be the expenses in both bienniums and what the actual expenses were, but based on the fact that they decided to ramp the program up earlier and they used funds they had available but also received revenue to offset. Am I understanding this document correctly then?
Madam Chair, Representative Kropp, yes.
Okay. I appreciate the understanding. I question how accurate some of our LFO analysts are, or not analysts, but the LFO fiscal statements that we, when we vote on these things, if we have these types of differences. And I understand how it all happened, and I don't have a problem with that. I don't have any problem with the way the money was spent in the income. I mean, that's fine with me. But it at first blush, it doesn't look good. And I would hope that we would be able to have perhaps a more accurate fiscal analysis, so when we're deciding these things as a matter of policy, that we can, and I know that's pretty difficult to ask for if an agency decides to go ahead and move things ahead more quickly.
Representative Krupp, too, if I could interject from my real-life business experience, that I've come to very firmly believe that the only value that fiscal projections have is that they allow you to isolate one scenario that will never happen.
Well, Madam Chair, in defense, I would have to say I think you're probably right.
Madam Chair, Representative Kropf, we base our fiscal analysis on the information that we have at the time. And at the time that this bill was passing through the legislature, the agency had no intention of implementing this program other than looking at administrative rules. And we questioned the integrity of the agency's costs at the time, but were assured that there wouldn't be additional costs. Now, down the road, when they actually went to implement it, and they were under pressure by their constituents to get something going, that changed it. But I think that legislative fiscal often gets chastised more the other way for too high of a fiscal impact than too low of a fiscal impact. We are more conservative than.
Well, I like that word, conservative, and thank you for that explanation, because I think you're right.
Representative Hayden, you had a comment.
Well, Madam Chair, I like the words ringing down through the ages of Senator Farioli, who with a smile and a shrug said, well, she's just guessing anyway. That may have been a different committee.
No, I think it was here.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And we have one more piece.
And the last piece, when you get into work session, is some proposed budget notes that were requested for consideration by the committee. So we'll talk about those then.
Now, before we close the public hearing, we got into a discussion yesterday about the levels of classifications of jobs and the related levels of compensations for those jobs. And I thought that in terms of kind of giving us some information that we could transfer into other areas that we were working on in the session, and also in other budgets that we're going to be dealing with in this session, it would be good for us to get some grounding in how those processes work. And so Susie has very considerately gotten DAS to send us, Stephanie, your name is Reet Major?
Right.
And so would you please come forward and kind of give us the 101 class here in how these processes take place?
Madam Chair and members, thank you for inviting me. I am the classification manager at the Department of Administrative Services. My name is Stephanie Reitmeier, and I work within the Division of Human Resource Services. And I'm here to answer questions that you may have.
Okay.
I didn't come prepared in any particular
way. We got into some issues relating to this budget that had some of the management people in the agency reclassified and their salaries being. Well, basically what we need to know is just what that process is all about and how it works and how the decisions are made to reclassify and how it's initiated. And then I think that the members should just ask questions as we progress through this.
Okay. Madam Chair, I will do my best to answer that. The Department of Administrative Services in the state of Oregon maintains what we call a classification plan. And what it is made up of is a series of classifications that summarize a particular type of work. And then individual positions or jobs are organized underneath those job classes or job titles, we could call them. It is merely a system of organizing and categorizing work so that you can efficiently pay it. And there is also a process that is set up separately from the process of describing work under a class to pay it. And that pay and that process of how we do that is grounded in collective bargaining and in statute. So then a particular job is first originated, let's say a new program comes in or something like that, and you need to staff it, typically human resource professionals will look at what the work is that's going to be done and find an appropriate description of that work in order to set appropriate pay. And the class plan that I spoke of earlier is made up of, right now, about 740 of those classes that describe different work. And so they typically compare the work that's being done to a very, well, a general document that is detailed about work and find a match, put the two together, assign it to a class, and that's called allocation or classification. There's already a salary attached to that class that has been decided either through, in many ways, typically evaluation of the work, collective bargaining, and also looking at the labor market and what seems to be a fair and reasonable price for that work. And then you know from that what your employee should be paid. At that point, typically there isn't any person working yet, it's just all done at the position level. Now, how changes come about is in many ways, and many people may request that that initial assignment be looked at. Sometimes it's the employee that feels that that match that was made between their job description and the class is no longer accurate, or maybe it never was in their opinion. Or it may be a manager who feels there's something wrong there. Maybe they can't recruit in qualified people, or maybe people keep leaving, and that gives them a tip-off that maybe something isn't right with the description and the compensation. Or maybe a human resource person who is paid and trained to monitor these things also makes an adjustment. So they happen in many different ways. The process of reclassification is actually a budget process that happens, where you look at that one job that someone has identified may not be classified correctly, and you study it through job analysis and decide if, yes, that is a correct class or if it isn't. If it isn't, then you look for one that is more appropriate. You assign it to that. But then that position that was initially assigned to a class and had dollars attached to it in a budgetary way, an allocation, that may need to change. And that's what the reclassification process is about, is changing the dollars associated with that position to new dollars that more closely reflect those that should go with the work. That's a basic hit at the process.
Representative Krupp.
Thanks. I've never had that explained before, and it certainly makes sense in terms of a methodology involved. Is it normal in the course of your dealing with these kinds of things to see substantial class jumps? For instance, yesterday we were looking at a proposed reclassification from 26 to 33, and that's a, in my mind anyway, that's a fairly sizable jump. Is that something that you see normally, or?
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, it's always a question of what is normal. I think that that is not usual, but there could be many things that could cause that, and I have seen it happen. Some things that could cause that I would expect to see would be perhaps a reorganization of the way the work was done in a major way, or perhaps a new program that had come in that they were not prepared for staff-wise, and they needed to assign those duties to, say, an existing person who had the expertise. They may have known at the time that that was not aligned with the class, and were probably compensating that person in some sort of temporary way for the extra work being, or the different work being done, and knowing that eventually they could do a study and then move to have the correct dollars attached to the allocation. So it does happen.
Okay.
It doesn't happen that often, because typically employees do not have come with the skill set at the lower levels to do the work of higher levels. Generally, you build those skills gradually, so you don't see it that often, but you do see it.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up?
And this, in essence, is why in each class, you'll have a series of steps. And so you have the incentive and the opportunity for, as those skill sets are built over time and experience, for that person to receive some reward and incentive for them to continue to, you know, do a good job and to learn more and so on and so forth. Is that, in effect, some form of merit pay recognition in terms of job performance, or are you, after a certain period of time, are you automatically moved to the next step just because you've been there a certain length of time, or do your supervisors recommend you for the next step? How does that work?
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, we're talking about different things here. What you're addressing is our compensation side of the classification. The classifications are typically in a series. So you would have maybe a person may come in as an entry, and then as they gain skills, they may or may not move, or they may compete through an interview to go to the next level. And there's typically higher grades of pay attached with each level. Within each level, there's also a grade of pay that what we call salary steps. They start at step one that is lower than typically step seven or eight. Different compensation plans have different steps attached to them. Employees, when they are hired, enter somewhere in that range dependent on their background. And then they will move from step to step in time based on merit. We do say that our system is a merit system. There have been people who criticize it, and basically it's a technique of management. Some managers manage well, and they make sure that their employees get it due to merit, and that's the way it should be. It doesn't always happen, and sometimes people get those steps automatically by being there.
Okay. So it varies the system, then.
Yeah, the system will take care of it if somebody does not act in an affirmative way.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam.
Representative Hansen.
I'm assuming for people that are in bargaining units that if their jobs are reclassed, that those are automatically, that part of our contract would say that we have to acknowledge the reclassification.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, yes and no. What the contracts typically provide, the bargaining agreements, is that if an employee questions their class, they can request from the agency that their class be analyzed. And we are under obligation to do that, to look at their job and analyze it. We are not under obligation to reclass it to the class they think is appropriate.
Well, are you?
We are obligated to study it. Yes.
Yeah, and adopt the recommendations of the study.
Representative Hansen and Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
Are there some general policies for non-bargaining unit employees that also apply?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, yes, there are. They're outlined in the Department of Administrative Services human resource rules and policies.
So,
update those and keep. And they're typically consistent with the bargaining unit.
Okay.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to follow up on some of the questions that were previously asked. What I think I heard was that it's not unusual. It doesn't happen often that somebody would jump seven classes, but it does happen. And I guess I want to take it from another end. I mean, how is it possible to take the same employee from a classification that's significantly different and put that exact same employee into a classification that's at a seven-step higher responsibility level? That seems to be very drastic for me. And so did the employee have some significant training in that time? Did, you know, I mean, like, would you look at this much more carefully than you would if someone came in looking for a two-step increase or a one-step increase? A seven, I think, would send off some warning signs. And so what's the process to determine whether or not it would be appropriate for an individual? Because I would assume that what you need, if you're going that much further, is to go out and bid for a job, because clearly it's a significantly different job than the job that that individual was hired to do. So I'm not clear about your what DAS does in order to assure that this is, that we've got the right person in the right job and paying them the right salary.
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, you are correct. In your assessment and in my professional judgment, if I were to approach a several class range, I would look at it carefully. We do have processes in place to do that. First off, the position is analyzed first at the agency level through their human resource section. They have personnel people working in the agency, or if they do not, they can contact DAS for that assistance, and we provide them a consultant to do that. So that's step one. Then after that, it is submitted to the budget section of the budget and management section of DAS, and they look at it. And they are provided guidelines, such as the one you mentioned. You know, is it just one area? Is it in a different career area? Is it several grades up? You know, and we have provided those for them. Typically, when a flag goes off in their head, then they will request from another section of DAS that does classification reviews all the time to look at it and see if it's reasonable. And so that happens as well. Typically, by the time that all that happens, you have an answer as to whether it's a correct thing to do or not. To address your question about qualifications and how we ensure all that happens, when we do write these class specifications, which is what they're called, within those also is a set of knowledge and skills that are needed to do the job, and a set of minimum qualification standards to make sure that we do get qualified people to do the work, and also to ensure fair work for fair pay and other merit standards. The new person, the person who had been assigned the duties and changed, would need to meet those minimum qualifications in order to be reclassified. So that is your assurance that they are qualified. Yes, it would be unusual that someone that was seven grades lower would meet the qualifications at the higher level. But, you know, employees come with many backgrounds. Not all of them are just from that agency. Sometimes they've worked in other organizations, and they are qualified. And that may have been why they were assigned those duties in the first place, because they knew they could do them. So I could see where that could happen. It is unusual. Another technique could have been to go outside and do a recruitment and look for a pool to see if there was someone as qualified or better qualified. That would take a vacant position to do that. Hmm. And it doesn't always happen in that sequence. In other words, agencies must implement a program right away, and they have workers there, so they assign the duties and they get the work out. And it isn't always the luxury that they have in the matter of efficiency to use that particular method. So it just depends.
Okay. Representative Nolan, I couldn't tell if you were wanting or not.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Do you know what percent of the requests for position review or classification either request or end up resulting in a downgrading of the position rather than an upgrading?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, no, I do not know the percentage. What I have viewed is that very few.
That's my experience as well, not in the state system, but in other similar classification systems, and it tends to be a mechanism for creeping up. I want to make sure I understand. May I follow up?
By all means.
I want to make sure I understand the point that Representative Bowman was raising, and let me be more direct. If a position is determined to justify reclassification, and the position has an incumbent in it, does the incumbent automatically get standing in the new classification?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan. Only if they meet the minimum qualification standards. And there are also other rules that are applied through the DAS policies and the collective bargaining agreement. They may have to repeat of a trial service. They may, you know, so they enter into a new status, so to speak. It isn't automatic. It usually happens that way.
But one final follow-up. The incumbent is not, doesn't have to compete for the new classification.
Madam Chair, in some cases they do. And it would be specific cases in which what we in personnel land have called abolish and establish. In other words, the new work is so different from the old work that we are actually abolishing an old position and establishing a new one. And in that case, the employee would need to compete for the job. Frankly, we try to avoid those situations because in most cases they are not this drastic, and it causes very difficult morale issues to have a person compete for a job that they've been doing for some time. That's the human side of the class plan.
Well,
wait a minute, Senator Farioli is next in line.
Yeah. It looks like the house is about ready to pay off like a slot machine. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I understand the two strands, and I think the two strands of what go into these classifications is important. Job description, that's clear. And they have to be accurate. They have to relate to the duties actually performed. And compensation, and those things are somewhat more subjective. I mean, until I was a state employee, I didn't realize that entering state employees could start at a level other than the entry level. But what we see, I think, is the concept, the death of the concept of topping out. Because if you work in your classification and you've run to the top of your compensation and you're in the executive division, meaning you're not subject to the Bureau of Labor and Industries restrictions for hourly workers, boy, they can just dump anything on you. That's why our staffs are all exempted from Bureau of Labor and Industries standards for, that's why they're all in the executive department and they're by appointment rather than another classification. But it seems like in this instance, and I guess I am being specific to this department, well, how do people top out? Do you ever hit the top of your classification for salary and just stay there? Because I know that a lot of classified employees would love to find out that there's a way around the top notch of their classification.
Madam Chair, Representative, excuse me, Senator Farioli, is it?
Bingo.
Italian side of me.
Madam Chairman, did you notice how she said the Italian side?
Yeah,
she's very good. The dialect.
The answer to that is yes, employees do top out. They go to the top of their class, the pay grade that's set for their class, and some of them sit there for a very long time. There isn't any automatic way to come out of that unless you apply for a new job. Sometimes it happens through reclassification. What you're talking about here is a perception of philosophy that people may think that's there, but we have protections in the system to try to avoid. In other words, we don't do reclassification for the purposes of helping an employee come out of the situation that they have topped out. We do reclassifications because the work has changed. And there are processes there to protect that's what happens.
All right. Follow-up question, Madam Chair?
By all means.
So, in relative terms, any employee can work out of class temporarily.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, correct.
Up or down?
Theory, that's what out of class means. Out of class means you're not working according to the class that your position has been assigned. It could be down, it could be up.
All right. And the higher up the trophic level, Madam Chair, if I could continue, that you go, actually, there's two things that happen. The more likely it is you will work out of class, because that's how people train additional skills. They get temporary duty assignments as acting this and acting that. Acting director, acting associate director. That really is how people get time on the job, is we upclass them out of class temporarily, and then they learn kind of the new duties. But they also underfill. That means they fill vacancies and vacations in their class or below their classes. They were in a class for that period of time. That's all part of the job. But the higher you go in an organization, the more likely it is that it'd be difficult to describe a duty that you haven't already performed in the agency, or not qualified or trained to do. For instance, the director, theoretically, would have knowledge of at least the management objectives of every single classification and every single employee in their agency. Because after all, they're the director. So I guess my question is, how does a director, who's essentially responsible for every aspect of management, end up working out of class and get reclassification up? How does that happen? Don't you hit the wall at some point as the executive director of an agency?
Madam Chair, Representative Senator Ferrioli, part of what you're saying, there's two areas going here. One, that theoretically the executive director can do all the work underneath is kind of, maybe depending on, we hire executive leaders to be leaders, not necessarily to do data entry, they may not have that skill.
I just refer to knowledge of the objectives, not the ability.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the, however, when what working out of class means is, it's been identified in some meaningful way. Typically, an HR person will do a study or look at it. And there's some sort of acknowledgement that the manager who has a classification as well, and it's probably in the principal executive manager series, maybe a high level, F or G, something like that. And something about the scope of their work has changed, just like any other employee. And therefore, it's recognized that their class needs to change as well, basically the pay part of the class. So the correct class is identified, and they are paid on a temporary basis for that higher class, because that is the work they are doing, until such time that a reclassification can occur and the right dollars be attached to the position. So it works just like any other employee would work, in that it's recognized that they are doing the work of a higher level than they are currently being compensated at, and therefore need to be compensated at the correct class until such time that study can happen.
One final?
By all means.
And these assessments of work, the scope of work and the classification, are done by the executive department within the executive branch, or are they done by the agency itself?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, both. Typically, when the initial call for the temporary situation that we talked about with work out of class, typically that's done within the agency itself. It's been my experience that the higher up in the organization you go, the more frequently that decision is not made within the agency, that they seek the guidance of DAS in that, because they're aware, of the sensitivities of that role and position. And so they want to make sure they're doing it right. But at the executive branch, we review others' studies. We don't really go out there and do that unless they request us to do it for them. And then, of course, we will do it for them.
And I guess I misspoke, Madam Chair. I just wondered if there was any third-party, private sector-connected personnel reality check that goes on besides having one state agency look at another state agency or having a state agency do a reclassification study within its own departments and decide, hey, this guy needs a raise.
Could you address that?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator. No, there is not. We do not have a private sector counterpart that we hire or contract with in order to review work of that nature.
And I guess the only observation I have, Madam Chairman, is that I think it's likely that we sort of see a bracket creep, unless there's some kind of an objective correlative outside in the real world, a reality check, or an absolute limit that gets placed on the upper compensation, especially at the executive level, where these folks, essentially, they're hired for their skill and their ability. They've paid their dues. They know how the system operates and the agency objectives. But I think they hire on knowing that there's an upper limit of compensation available. And that seems to me to be the budgetary considerations that legislators have set and that the executive branch has set. So if there's a bracket creep beyond that, I understand what cost of living increases do, and those things are important. But I guess I don't understand how you can just do a lateral arabesque and end up working out of class and then have that legitimized over time and end up giving yourself and your subordinates reclassifications and raises. It seems to me to be a budget buster strategy. It's been effective. You know, I'm fully prepared to support the budget of the State Marine Board. I don't think this is it's just merely an example of what may be happening in several agencies in state government. I'm not saying it's the most terrible thing we've ever encountered. It's just something that we ought to be aware of. The executive branch set the upper level of salary, and all of a sudden we got people that are outside that level. And why? Well, they worked out of class. Who said so? They said so. Oh, I get it. Where do I sign? I mean, it's just something that bothers me.
I think your point is very well made, and Representative Krupp has been patiently waiting.
Well, impatiently, but.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What happens when someone is in a classification and they're working in a position, and really nothing is occurring in their position for them to go to the next step? For them to be eligible for the next step or for the next reclassification.
Okay.
That person essentially then is stagnant at that level unless something occurs, either a duty or a knowledge skill increase or something else that's assigned to them that they have to take care of. So in other words, the only raises that person might see would be whatever generally is agreed in the collective bargaining agreements with the governor whenever they do that kind of thing. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, yes, that's correct. Unless an employee affirmatively applies for a new job or they have a change in job duties that might signal a need for a reclass, they will move through their steps according to good performance. And then when they reach the top of their salary range, they will remain there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Senator Dukes.
I think I understand reclassification, and Senator Farioli was correct. If you do as many as we're doing this session, and there's a ton of them in budgets this session, that you're looking at bracket creep. But the one that, and I make no apologies for this, the one that I don't understand is how someone who's been at the head of an agency for a number of years ends up working out of class. I don't get it. You said that reclassifications were done because something about the scope of their work has changed. With an agency that has stayed about the same size, with about the same number of employees and the same mission, I don't get how the scope of work has changed and how they can work out of classification. I mean, for me, that's at the heart of this. The others, I don't know, you know, I guess I would question the fact that now a deputy is going to be in the same classification that the director currently is. That one actually bothers me as well, because for a long time we must have thought that that position that classification was adequate for someone to run an entire agency. And now we're saying that it's only adequate for the person who's assisting someone to run an entire agency. So I guess I wonder about that classification. But my strongest bottom line is, what changes in the scope of work of someone in that position? I'll even give you a couple of them that we created last session, agencies, where they were probably budgeted at the old level and now they're agency heads and we got to fix them. But when you've been there for quite a while, nothing significant has changed at the agency. How do you do that?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes. There are mechanisms to do it, to answer how.
Obviously there are. They're right there in the book.
I cannot address Marine Board specifically because I did not do that study. And I just don't know the proposal that's before you. So I don't want to speak incorrectly. I can tell you, based on my experience, how I've seen it happen in other situations. And there would need to be something significant about a change in what they are doing. Typically, classification deals with not more, but more difficult. So maybe, I mean, I've seen this happen where an agency has not changed in size, but something else has changed about their agency, such as maybe they have more complex regulations to deal with. Maybe they have a different customer base to deal with. Maybe they've had to diversify their staff, and that has added different complexities. Maybe their funding sources have become more complex. Maybe they've become accountable in different ways, and that's made their work more complex. Those are all factors I would look for if I were asked to review the position to see if it warranted a change in classification. But something should have changed, unless there was an error made in the first place. And I've seen that happen too.
A really old error.
Well, it would have to be a very old in this. I mean, I don't know this individual situation, but I.
But I guess, Madam Chair, even then, I just figure you hire on at the very top level, and you know what you're getting into, and you know what you're supposed to do, and that you ask for the increases, for the pay increases, for the merit increases, for the step increases, whatever they are. That I understand. The reclass, I don't, and I like Senator Farioli. I'm going to support the budget, but I've got to say it. Yeah. I think that we've started a really poor trend. I mean, there are agencies. If this is something that you can do and get away with, then there are agency heads that have been under attack from the legislature for years that I think ought to be getting hazard pay. And they haven't, you know? So I. It seems to me the scope of their work has changed significantly. So,
Madam Chair, if I could interject something that isn't an answer to a specific question, if that's all right. I would like to say that the Department of Administrative Services does have processes in place to try to monitor what you are describing. I call it grade creep in my profession. And we have benchmark positions that we evaluate agencies' heads. We do job evaluations to make sure that we're still in line. We look at labor market trends to make sure our salaries are appropriate. We look at recruitment and retention. There are policies in place and controls in place to control this. So I don't want any of the committee members to get an impression that it's grade creep is rampant. And, you know, I don't believe that is the case. There are processes in that, as part of good government and good business, that we have put in place to help with that. As far as the Marine Board, I can't comment in any way.
Representative Nolan is the next in line for questions, and then we need to move on with actually working and adopting the budget. There are obviously a lot of unanswered questions and a lot more information that can come out in this area, and I would urge the members to get in touch with Stephanie on a one-to-one basis and work through the issues, because this is obviously something that we're going to be looking at in a lot of budgets. So please represent.
I actually had a comment and I will pass on it, but I would like to encourage this committee and the other subcommittees to look at, to try to make an assessment of the statewide impact of this issue. And obviously my biggest emphasis will be on the general fund, but even if it's a small practice, 3 or 4% of the general fund is a huge dollar amount. And I'd like us somehow to figure out how all the Ways and Means subcommittees can look at it holistically rather than try to get at it in isolated.
I will raise the issue with the chairs.
Thank you.
And just to close, Representative Hayden.
To continue, Madam Chair. I would like to have the holistic answer also, but I don't have a very clear picture of what we've spent half an hour of time on, what the level of compensation of this director is. Does the administrator know, or can they tell me? And what's the level of the raise? Are we talking about a 2% raise or a 20% raise? What have we been talking about for half an hour?
Excuse me. In a minute, I'll try to look that up for you.
It's about a $7,000 raise.
What?
It's about a $7,000 raise. I don't know the percentage. I don't know the base.
Well, I thought, Madam Chair, I thought the director had, talking about the director's position, had been getting paid that amount of money all along for performing the work. We're just codifying it by reclassing the job, in essence, is what I thought we had. But I think the larger question that I would like to have answered in that regard, I know Representative Bowman does, who we've been sitting here talking about it, is what are the circumstances surrounding the three reclasses or that were in the budget document yesterday where they jumped seven classes? I'd like an explanation of that. It just seems to be an extreme jump in my view. And I know, Stephanie, you've been very good. Thank you, and I appreciate you saying my name correctly. And I wrote your name down, Reitmeier, right? Okay, I want to make sure I say that right, but I really appreciate your bearing with us and helping us understand this issue in terms of the process. I just think I need to understand a little bit more about why the agency's asking to reclass these individuals at such a higher rate before I'm prepared to vote on the budget, Madam.
Linda, do you have that information?
Okay.
Madam Chair, I do have copies of the letter that the HR analyst wrote to the Marine Board with their recommendations for two of the three positions. I don't have a copy on the director's position, but I can tell you on the management analyst 3 to a principal exec manager E, which would be the deputy director position, that the analyst writes that that the duties in the job description better reflect the duties performed as the board's deputy director as a principal exec manager E is appropriate. The positions, duties, and responsibilities and its budget authority reflect those of a position in the PEM series. The classification guide recommends that two levels of know-how exist between the supervisor subordinate positions, which translates to one PE manager level difference for the positions above the principal exec manager D level. So that would be the reason and rationale between making it an E level to the director's F level, if I understand that correctly. And it needed to be an exempt position. And then using the evaluation guidelines on the IS position, which is the second letter here. The position description for this position identifies it as a software hardware specialist, ISS-5. And then they had some recruitment and retention issues with the position, so that was another factor in the evaluation process. They determined that there was a certain amount of planning to be present at the second level and construction at the third level in the data infrastructure function. And they had some comments about the position description form that they were using, which was immaterial. And that's about all they said in their letter. So there, behind this letter then is documentation at the analyst level for each of the factors that they consider when they're doing a classification review. On the director, I'm not sure how that occurred other than I think that the governor's office authorized a reclassification in looking at the duties and responsibilities, and it may have been more a function of bracket creep than actual changes in duties and responsibilities, but it was approved.
Well, Madam Chair, as we don't have the information here and we can't readily get it, is it inappropriate to ask the director? The director is in the room. The director certainly knows the answer.
I think the first question I would ask the director, is it appropriate for you to comment on this issue?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Don Hefner, the director of the Marine Board, since you're talking about me, I as well come to the table and talk with you. In regard to the reclassification of the Management Analyst 3 to Deputy Director position, where there's a substantial increase in salary ranges, the incumbent had been working in effect as my Deputy Director for a number of years. We lost our Deputy Director position back in the Roberts administration following the passage of the property tax cut and discussion of glide slopes and management to staff ratios and so forth. So we sacrificed the title, if you will, of Deputy Director back then. But the duties didn't go away. Having somebody to back me up when I'm not available to do everything and to supervise everything. And so, in effect, we had a Deputy Director position, and the person was working as a Principal Executive or Management Analyst 3. And it wasn't appropriate to do that. It wasn't right to have that person working at a much higher level and not being compensated for it. And that's why we took the step to have it reviewed. The Department of Human Resources reviewed it and found that it was appropriate. And it's classified.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you. How many years has it been since this person's been acting in that capacity, and how come you haven't come forward, or have you come forward in times past and asked for the reclassification previously? Why did you wait so long to ask for a reclass?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, part of it is a timing question, I guess, as much as anything. You can ask a person to do a certain number of duties for so long, and there comes a day where you know it really is quite apparent that they're working out of class. We lost a deputy position that would have been about 8 years ago, and so this person's been filling in, doing a variety of duties as my right-hand person for some time, and.
And Madam Chair,
when I put forward a request to have my position reviewed, and this was back in, some of it started back in 97, 99, it was actually approved in 99, it was approved June of 99 at the end of the last session. And when that was approved, and my position was moved up from E to an F, then the gap in there became so great that it was an appropriate time to have that deputy position looked at and evaluated, and they found it to be appropriate.
And one more, Chair, Madam.
Chair, Madam.
One more.
Madam, question.
Yeah. You know what I mean. So when all of this occurred 8 years ago, did you begin paying that individual, that analyst level, the director's pay the moment you, or have you ramped up to that over time? Are you paying that person now that the equivalent of a deputy director's pay, or how does that work?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, no, that person was not paid out of class during that period. They were working as a Management Analyst 3 and being compensated as a Management Analyst 3, but in reality their duties were at a higher level. they weren't being compensated. Okay. They were being undercompensated during that period of time.
Should answer my question, or he or somebody?
Well, Madam Chair, I would just make the comment that I'm uncomfortable with that type of a practice of paying someone a lower salary for increasing their duties and their responsibility. I've been a firm believer all of my life that if you're asked to do more, you should be compensated for that, whether it's more work or more difficulty in your work. And I have no problem with that concept. I'm uncomfortable with the fact that we've had this person there doing that job for 8 years. Not to chastise you in any way, Paul, but I don't like that practice. I don't think it's right.
Senator Dukes.
Well, Madam Chair, I agree with that, but I'm more uncomfortable with the fact that back under the Roberts administration, Paul, and I was here, I remember those days when a lot of people gave up positions, the legislature removed a position from your agency with your agreement. And instead of coming back to the legislature and asking for a deputy, you moved somebody into that position, slowly but surely, and gave them those responsibilities. And that's the sort of thing that frustrates legislators a lot. I mean, we made a conscious decision at that time to remove a whole lot of positions that we knew were going to hurt, believing that the agencies would be working in good faith that way. And when you hit the point where you needed to do something different, you needed to come back to the legislature and say, I need to do something different. I need support. I have to be out of the building a third of the time, and somebody has to make or I need this and this and this, and have that conversation, which you chose not to do. And instead, they've been working out of class, and now there's very little, unless we want to get rid of the person, there's very little choice as to what to do. And that's what frustrates me. The conversation happened the first time. It should have happened the second time.
Are you ready? Susie has some additional information on the points that you raised.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden asked what the change in the salary was. In this case, the director's already getting paid the salary, so there's not an increase. But the salary range difference between a principal exec manager E and an F is lost page here, but again. The starting level for the PEM series in the F is $43.96 per month, and it goes up to a $64.90. And E starts at about the same amount and goes to a $58.91.
Slower.
So it's about $53.96 a month to $58.91. And there are about eight steps between. 43.96 to okay. 58.91. There are about eight steps. They're incrementally about 5% about between each step along the range. In this, then the next level F is 43.96 to 64.90. There is a two-step difference on the end of the range for an F series. And then there are a number of different positions within each range, as Stephanie explained. So there could be 20 PEMEs at different salary levels because of the different jobs around the state. Generally, about the same amount of money. That is about the range.
Okay, and this is base salary, and we add about 30% for the package for the benefits?
That's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
One other thing that I would add is the subcommittee does not have to approve these reclassifications. If you approve them, then the agency goes off and does business as planned. If you don't approve the reclassifications, the agency then is forced to go back and restructure its work so that the work is done within the classifications that you have approved. And they may also, there are some other mechanisms in state government that would allow them to go ahead and do some reclassification without legislative approval. And one of those mechanisms is called a permanent financing package. And in that process, what they have to do is they have to eliminate a position that they already have authorized in order to increase the salary and classification range of another position. And so they use the salary savings from the position that they eliminated. This agency's case, they are a small agency, and they have a need for bodies in each of the positions, and they don't have a lot of turnover and opportunity for those kinds of changes. So that's probably mechanism is not available to them to do that. And the only other way would be for the agency to work with Department of Administrative Services to do a market survey of his unique or those unique specific positions and do it in a market sense, which takes a, or I think, I'm going to defer to Stephanie here, but I think they have to look at the entire classification when they do that sort of a change. So you do have some options.
Comments?
Is the chair prepared to entertain any of those options?
Whoops,
we're not in work session yet, are we?
We're not yet.
No. I didn't hear what you said.
I asked if the chair was prepared to entertain any of those options as we discussed.
The chair is prepared to entertain them.
Madam Chair, could I say one last
thing? Of course.
Last thing. In regard to this, the question was asked earlier regarding the open duties, what prompted the look at changing the reclassification level of the director position. I've been an incumbent since 1984, and as your spreadsheet, I think, very well illustrates, the scope of our agency in terms of employees, size of programs, the number of customers that we serve, and everything else has increased dramatically since 1984. Has been the first reclassification of the position since that time. It's been at the E level for a number of years, despite the growth. Back in 1984, if you recall, we had a grand total of 11 employees. Today we have 38. So for all of our programs, with the additional resources that have been made available, have, I think, more than changed enough to justify that one step difference between where it was way back when. And it was at the E level even prior to 1984. I mean, if you want to take this budget back to 1977 level, it was at the E level even back then. So there's been a significant amount of growth, change, and additional responsibility added with that growth, and those are the factors that the Department of Administrative Services was looking at when they took that into account.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say to Mr. Don Hefner, I feel for you having to sit through us having these conversations, and I have no problem with the raise that took place in a director's position. And this is new for a lot of us, during the Ways and Means process and truly trying to understand how the classification works. So I hope you take that in the spirit that we've been participating in this conversation about. Having said that, the deputy director position still is troubling to me. And it's clear that you need a deputy. I have no question that you need a deputy. My concern is still that we did the significant jump of an individual who has been working out of class for at least a couple of years, which says we were not paying this employee sufficient for the work that they were given. And so it begs the question for me, you know, how often do we do that? How many state employees do we have working out of class for years that, in fact, we, for whatever reason, we don't go through the appropriate process to make sure they're reclassed? If this person had gone like you did from one step to the next step, that's real simple for me. But that significant jump, and then to hear that this person's been doing the work for over 2 years, I'm troubled by that because I think people should be compensated for the work that they do. And so that's where I'm having a problem. because it could be going on a lot more. And then to hear this, this is troubling to me to think, you know, it's almost 10 years ago that you lost your deputy. And so we just told somebody they could play at being deputy until we could figure out a way to actually reclassify them. And so I'm real troubled by that. And it's not this budget. I am very ready to support this budget. But I did want to have that on the record. And I did want to make sure that you didn't feel like that this was a personal thing for you. It's really us trying to understand how this classification process works.
Representative Krupp, have you gotten enough information
yes.
to make sense of the reclassification
yes,
proposals? Are you ready to proceed with the budget?
I am.
Any further questions or comments?
Madam Chair, are we in work session? Are we in work session?
No, we're not yet.
We're not yet. Did you have a comment? Senator Ferrioli.
Hi, Madam Chairman, I appreciate particularly the comments of Representative Bowman. I feel the same way she does. The issue really isn't, I think, a budget buster type issue for this agency. I think this agency does a good job. We need to support the agency. And obviously, there's a need for the position of executive or assistant director. That's fine. I totally agree with Senator Dukes. The idea that we should have been considering, rather than reclassification, restoration of position, so we could all have that in the budget, heads up, know what we're doing. I also appreciate particularly the chairman's willingness to write a memo or have a conversation with other co-chairs in Ways and Means and just alert them to the idea that bracket creep will eat us. You know, we're already out of balance by a couple hundred, $300 million in this process, as much as $700 million. We had another chalk talk today in caucus, which I think will be repeated in the other caucus building offices in this building, at least four. Three others about roll-up costs being over $1 billion out of budget in the next biennium if we go through with some of the stuff that we're contemplating in this biennium. Bracket creep is a luxury we can't afford, but it also deprives legislators of the public policy discussions that we need to have to make good choices. So, Madam Chairman, I'm willing to support the budget. I think the comments well made that we don't intend this to be demoralizing to this agency, just that the mechanism for rewarding an employee or creating the opportunity above somebody's classifications been used before, but it's just not a good way to go.
I think that your remarks are very well taken, both Representative Krupp's remarks and Senator Ferrioli's remarks, and what it points out to me is the need for some very honest and frank communication between agencies and the legislature during this process. And I think that if we could center discussions around what actual realities are rather than the kind of maneuvers that are going on, that we would be able to come out of this with a lot better budget in terms of how we spend our constituents' dollars. And with that, and if there are no more general comments on the budget, I would like to move to a work session. And
Motion. And I would like some guidance on this. Again, with much of the rest of the committee, I'm not primarily concerned with this one agency, but as you know, since the first day of the legislature, I have been concerned about the number of FTE, and reclassification is another thing. And I think if we don't take a position here, with what agency will we take it, and when will we take it? So I would move to not allow the reclassifications. I'm prepared to vote that up and down, and I will support the agency budget either way we decide. But I think that we should take a position on the number of FTEs that we're hiring and the amount of reclassification that we're doing. So I make that motion, Madam Chair.
Senator Dukes.
This is just for me. It would be easier for me to do them separately. Had the agency come to us and said, we need a deputy, I probably would have supported that. I still don't get an agency director working on a class. I don't know what the salary will be for Paul, but I can guarantee you he deserves it. He does an excellent job. He has served our constituents well over time. It's, for me, it's a process piece, and I don't agree with an agency head working out of class. I agree with pay raises and steps and all the rest of that. So it would be, I would like to do, although doing that, I think you end up with them both in the same class, which does present a small problem.
Madam Chair, I'm prepared to have some guidance on the motion, whether it would be one or the other or both. I would accept that, and I will amend my motion to suit the chair. But it should not be neither. Make a motion on one or the other, both of these reclassifications.
And just for clarity, Representative Hayden, when you say one or the other, what are you referring to?
The director or the deputy director being reclassified. Is my understanding correct on that, that both those positions are being reclassified?
Wow. Madam Chair, there are three positions right. in the packages to be reclassified. There is an information specialist whose position is currently classified out of management analyst 3, going to an information systems analyst Seven. Position. And that's one position. Then there is a there's if the IS position is in a lower information systems position going to a higher level. The management analyst 3 going to a PEM E is the deputy position, and then the director's position being reclassified from an E to an F.
Well, we've had a request from the senator to divide the question, and I'm perfectly prepared to do that in any manner that is suitable to the chair.
So the question would be to accept the reclassification to the deputy administrator position and to accept the reclassification as a separate consideration yes. of the director's position.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, the motion actually is to deny all three reclassifications. So if you want to divide that question, you can divide it, or you can withdraw the motion
it
and make a different
to be
motion.
It divided into three pieces.
Madam Chair. And I don't know that there's an easy way out of this for me, because if I agree that we need a deputy in this agency and do it without the straightforward discussion that we didn't have at this point, I don't think it makes any sense to have the deputy and the director in the same classification.
Which is
a little awkward, which is if you turn one of them down and you approve the other one, that's what you get. It would have been nicer if Des had been able to work all this out for us ahead of time, because that's the way it had been presented to us, but it wasn't, so I'm stuck no matter what I do. But thank you, Representative Hayden, for trying to help me.
Representative Krieger.
I've been sitting here kind of quiet today listening to all this, and I'm going to back up a little. I know we're in the work session. But when they cut the position to start with, somebody was going to have to take up that slack. That was the...
Well, maybe.
Or normally. Did we relieve them of some responsibility? I don't think we did. It's just like we had four game officers at Gold Beach. Then we went to 2. Well, that's how I got 5.5 years of uncompensated overtime on the book, because we weren't covered by the Fair Labor Standards Act. We just picked it up to 16 hours a day instead of 8. And we did that for about 8 years. They don't have that prerogative, I don't think, and I don't think I want people working 16 hours a day, but I know I'm kind of diversing back. But we put them in a position to where certain duties probably had to get done for the agency to move forward and be an agency and provide the service that the society expects. And they found a way to do it. It didn't cost the state anything. That was probably wrong, because I believe people should get paid for what they do. So now we have an obligation to try to straighten it out. How we're going to do that is the question.
Madam Chair.
Could you bring that point forward to the committee?
Sure, but did you have a question first?
Representative Nolan, you're next in line.
Not having been here as Senator Dukes was when the deputy director position was taken out of the budget, I would interpret it a little differently than Representative Krieger has. I would interpret it that the legislative direction was remove the position and cut back on the work that position had been doing, and that we were essentially saying, yes, we understand that means some things that would be good for the public won't get done, but that's the reality when you don't have enough money to pay for everything that would be good for the public. And I think it was incumbent on the governor and the agency to bring forward an issue if there are constitutional obligations that that position had to perform or other things that had to be done to say so. And absent the demonstration of that, I think it was incumbent upon the agency to find a way to do its job by not doing the functions that the deputy director did. I'm troubled by the agency unilaterally, as I think I heard Senator Duke say, deciding to continue to do things that the legislature had essentially said stop doing. So I'm inclined to support Representative Hayden's motion.
There is a concept that perhaps we can deal with this issue in a policy statement or a budget note. And could you kind of forward what we were talking about?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if the issue isn't these specific classifications for the jobs that these people are doing now, and it's a broader issue of how the state in general is dealing with reclassifications or eliminating positions and continuing to do the work so that you end up having reclassification, perhaps a either a budget note with this budget or talking to the co-chairs of Ways and Means about a budget note in the Department of Administrative Services budget regarding all reclassifications, that there be some sort of a reporting mechanism to the legislature so that you become more aware of these activities that are going on in the executive branch as they're occurring rather than when they come forward in their budgets or when it's already occurred, may be a solution to the issue that you have on the table rather than singling out this agency and only those agencies that will appear in the Natural Resource Subcommittee. That's an option because I hear you all talking about a variety of things, but not these particular classification issues.
The picture that's emerging to me is that we are dealing with a government-wide policy here, and that we as legislators are in an information void. We have no way to know what the basis of judgment was for reclassifying these jobs. We have no basis to know what the basis in judgment was for changing the salary range of the jobs. And without having that information, it's very difficult for us to decide whether that was a wise move or not a wise move, and concur with it or have problems with it. And I think that we have a broad policy issue here that we need to take up with the co-chairs, in that if we are to concur with these reclassification issues, we need a lot more information than we have right now, and we need it brought to us as a routine matter.
Madam Chair, I could not agree with you more, and I would take it even a step further. I think if we go to the co-chairs in this regard, I think we ought to look comprehensively at how much reclassifications are costing us in this biennium. The scary thing we just heard was that we're looking at $1 billion in roll-up costs in the next session for the next budget, and that's a phenomenal amount of money in roll-up costs. I think as a broad I tend to agree with Susie's assessment. I think we need to look at this as a broad policy perspective, and I think we ought to try to ascertain through LFO or work in conjunction with DAS what are the real costs of reclassification statewide in the agencies. What's the dollars of fee? And then look at the policy implication of that and make a decision and stick with it as a legislature. I'm uncomfortable in not reclassifying this person to the deputy director's classification. I'll tell you why. Because for 8 years they've been working in that position. And people should get paid for their work and their worth. You're absolutely right, Representative or Madam Chair, in that we are in an informational void here as to why this happened 8 years ago. However, the fact is that person's been operating that position. I think they ought to be compensated for it. even though I agree with Senator Dukes that I think you got a deputy director and a director in the same class now, is a...
It's an untenable position.
It's an untenable position. But on the other hand, I think we have to be fair. We've got to be fair to Paul, and we ought to be fair to this deputy director, too.
I see two issues here, and what I would like to do is have the concurrence of the committee to draft a letter to the co-chairs outlining the issues that we have discussed here about the need to have this introduced into the information that's presented to committees and presented to the co-chairs as a whole. And I'd like to go ahead and draft that letter, and we'll circulate it back through for people to take a look at before we go ahead. But we have the immediate problem here of how to deal with these three positions. And I think that Representative Krupp and Senator Dukes, you're right on, that it is untenable to have a director and a deputy director being paid at the same salary level. We have some obvious problems here in what Senator Dukes has brought forward, and always points out one of the shortcomings of term limits, where she has the institutional memory to be able to bring forward the issue about when the budgets had to be cut in the 80s, and this position was eliminated, and here we are dealing with it again. But the reality is just, I think, what you said, Representative Krupp, that you have had a person doing this job that hasn't been fairly compensated for what they're doing, and so this move is a correction to that situation. I am quite frankly at a loss as to what to do here. I would like to move this budget, and I think that we have an equity issue most definitely that we need to set right. But I am open to suggestions, and you've had your hand up for the longest time.
Okay. If we're looking for a suggestion, although I think we have a motion on the floor, my elegant solution for this would be to approve the budget with the two footnotes and then continue to work on the letter. This has been a fascinating discussion.
The budget notes.
I've got no problems in terms of the reclass of a director of an agency that's moved from a $2,700,000 budget to a $27 million budget. I think that the intricacies in terms of the deputy director and moving them back, eliminating the position, and then having it come forward through the reclass process creates obviously some problems in terms of legislative intent. But they're still two different legitimate systems. And they're at cross purposes now, but our other option would be for a Ways and Means Committee, in our relatively limited discussion, going into really, really a micromanaging of how the organizational chart within a department works. I think the director should be commended in terms of, commended in terms of trying to do the right thing by his employee, and I'm pleased with the action that you've taken, even though, in terms of legislative intent, it probably wasn't. It certainly doesn't look good for our purposes, but sometimes. Sometimes things we've got to make compromises, and in order to get the job done, sometimes people have to use all the tools that are available to them rather than just the budget discussions. The other thing, I think in the past there may not have been the right climate legislatively to come back, and I can understand the director not wanting to reopen that discussion at the legislature until there's been a time to see whether the new management scheme that was imposed actually had a chance to work. Anyway, we've got a lot of different elements of a problem, but we don't have a good way to put it all together. So I think we've let him earn his new salary for an hour or two. now we can move on with this budget and then take a bigger picture look at the issues, the general issues of reclassification.
Representative Hayden.
Well, Madam Chair, again, I seek guidance from the Chair. We had some concern about a holistic solution, and I think that perhaps Representative Hansen has made a substitute amendment to my motion that is holistic, in that he has suggested that we add the two budget notes to this budget, and that we send a letter to the co-chairs expressing our concern statewide in all the budgets. I'm aware of the fact that we still have a shot at this budget in full committee, where we can amend it or vote no if we're not satisfied with the budget notes or the letter to the co-chairs. And if it's needs the approval of the chair, I will withdraw my motion and suggest we accept Representative Hansen's motion.
The chair would gratefully accept the withdrawal of your motion. Do you wish to put? Yeah.
I would move that we accept this budget with the two budget notes that have been presented to us by legislative.
Chair, may I clarify? That is also then with the technical adjustments. Yeah. It's the governor's recommended budget with technical adjustments to reduce the employer PERS that was presented to you in yesterday's work session. As I've outlined it in my memo showing where the amendments in the bill would be.
Do you amend your motion?
I have to go through each of the ones.
Point of order, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry.
Well, wait a second here. Representative Krupp has been bursting to say something.
Geez, I hope it wasn't that apparent, was it?
The first door on the left.
Yes. Thank you, Senator. Is a possible solution here in regards to the deputy director's position is perhaps approving a lower class than what is being asked for?
I'm not sure that we have that option.
Do we have that ability to do that as a committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator.
I think we have the ability, but I think the terms arbitrary and capricious are rattled around somewhere in there. We haven't done any more analysis on this than we have how they got to the reclass.
But I think we're very ill prepared to go in that direction.
But we have the authority, whether it's prudent or not.
Yeah. Representative Nolan.
Forgive me for not having it committed to memory, but I thought that the rules of committee were that once a motion was made, it belonged to the committee, could not be withdrawn.
Could we have clarification on that?
Madam Chair, no, that they can be withdrawn.
Okay. Or I thought
we have a motion on the floor.
Madam Chairman, because I served so long as Senator. Senator, now Representative Randy Leonard, who would with great dignity draw himself up and say, a motion to amend is always in order, Madam Chair. So the amendment to withdraw was in order.
We have a motion on the floor to accept the LFO recommended budget, to add the budget notes as presented to the budget, and to draft a letter to the co-chairs outlining the problems that we found with the classification system and asking that a solution be discussed in that area. Any further discussion on the motion? I will ask the committee staff to call the roll.
Ruthie?
Aye.
Aye.
This is on the amendment or on the whole motion?
Aye.
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 Representative Bowman?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Chair Morgan?
Aye. The motion, having received a majority, is declared to be passed to the full Ways and Means Committee. In full Ways and Means, I think we're not on full.
No, I'm not, so you can't tap me, ma'am. I would love to otherwise. But
I will carry this. this issue to full Ways and Means so that I can outline the other problem that we've uncovered. On the House floor, I would ask Representative Bowman, would you do the honors on this budget on the House side? And Senator Dukes, can I prevail upon you?
We were just talking. You're probably better off if Senator Farioli carries this one. There are some pieces I might feel obligated to explain.
In the interest of brevity on the Senate floor.
We'll have you do it instead of Farioli, okay?
Brevity doesn't necessarily fit here.
Would you do this for me?
I would be pleased, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. And no further business being before the committee. Do you have something to say?
Well, just when you only have two senators on a committee, it really limits your options.
Better be nice to us.
Madam Chairman, you have 30 options on the Senate floor to carry this bill, and lots of times we have chosen senators who had nothing to do with the bill.
They couldn't explain all those specifics.
Adjourn the committee, reconvene Monday at 1 o'clock, and we will be taking up the Division of State Lands budget. Mondays?